Good morning. It's 29th of March. Our first reading for today is Numbers 11. I've come across some notes of studies that were given by Brother Fred Barling years ago on the Law of Moses. The section I'm going to read makes a passing reference to Numbers 11, verse 5. I read, "It will help our later researches if, before proceeding to the detailed study of the laws themselves, we first pause to consider the close interrelation between them and contemporary events. That interrelation is, in fact, the key to the proper understanding of the history and the legislation alike. We must first isolate the salient facts. They may be enumerated thus. 1. Israel developed into a nation under conditions of slavery in an alien land. 2. God led them forth from their bondage, delivering them from destruction first through the Passover blood, then through the crossing of the Red Sea, which they afterwards celebrated in triumphant song. 3. From start to finish of their exodus, they were guided by the pillar of cloud and fire, and their basic physical needs were satisfied in the wilderness with miraculous provision of manna and water. 4. At Sinai, God formally by covenant pronounced himself their God and accepted them as his people, and then delivered laws for the regulation of their national life as his representatives on earth. 5. The covenant made, God ordered the construction of a sanctuary wherein he might dwell in their midst as a token that he was indeed their God, and arranged the establishment of a mediatorial priesthood to minister there. 6. Separating the land of bondage behind them and the land of promise ahead of them lay the wilderness with its rigours and privations. This they had to traverse if their redemption was to reach completion." How eloquently these facts would have spoken to them as a complete parable of salvation had their hearts not been hardened. Each Israelite was meant to see in Egypt with its slavery a symbol of his natural state as a sinner, in dire need of deliverance from the bondage of sin, to see, moreover, that he was powerless to effect that deliverance for himself. God alone could effect it for him, and then only on the basis of the shedding of sacrificial blood. Passover had been followed by the passage, under the guidance of the pillar, through the Red Sea to the liberty beyond. So he, conscious that redemption was available to him, had, under spirit guidance, to break with his old life of servitude to sin by a formal act of renunciation, and thereafter lead a new life no longer serving sin. Exulting in the miracle of his deliverance from slavery and death, he was to conceive of his new life as essentially a spiritual pilgrimage in which God's law was to be his constant meditation and the spiritual food and drink of God's providing his indispensable daily sustenance as he proceeded forward toward a divinely appointed rest. Therein, as one of God's covenant people, he was never to revert to his old ways, but so to live in conformity with divine law that God might see fit to dwell with him and be accessible to him through the appointed mediator. When the vision of the good land ahead was obscured by nostalgic memories of the land he had left, with its material plenty and piquancy, and here there is the reference to Numbers 11, verse 5, he was to realise that he could not revert to them without reverting at the same time to the bondage which went with them. To seek to go back was indeed to do despite to the redemptive work of God. "He shall henceforth return no more that way," we read in Deuteronomy 17. Such was the fundamental law. Those words, of course, are equally applicable to our redemption and pilgrimage and the longed-for rest. Thank you for listening to me.